Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, cause it's time for the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life, the first Hip Hop Saved My Life of 2018. I hope you had a good new year. The reason I am talking so creepily is because once again, my family are asleep and I'm recording this intro downstairs. I hope you had a good new year. I'll go into more detail about it next week. We're going to be doing, when we're not talking to guests, we're going to be doing little episodes in between where we talk about albums you should be listening to, etc., etc. So, yeah, look out for that. Okay, so this week we are talking to Andrew Emery. Author of the book Wiggers with Attitude, where he tells a story of him, I guess like the British version of Jensen Karp in terms of telling his story of almost making it as a rapper. He also was a major contributor for Hip Hop Connection, sort of the first hip hop magazine in the world, and also was one of the editors of Fat Lace magazine. It's a great chat. He's a very funny guy. We talked about sort of how he got into hip hop, how he got into Hip Hop Connection, who was a prick when he interviewed them and who wasn't. It's a good chat. So I hope you enjoy. And if you don't, please don't tweet me. Bye.
This is the bit where we introduce our guest.
I'm honoured to say I'm joined by Andrew Emery. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. First Hip Hop Saved My Life of the New Year. Does it feel exciting for you to be the first guest of 2018?
It does, yeah. Yeah, it must be a quiet week for you that you're a journalist on.
do you actually listen to the podcast at all?
I do, yeah. I'm still a bit behind.
I'm not going to test you or anything, but it's just that you will know, even from a casual listen, that the level of knowledge of hip hop of the guests on this show varies massively.
Yeah,
I mean, we've had like proper super nerds on. We've also had people like Tom Davis, who I think knows Snoop and Dre, and that's about it. So I think it's fair to say you are at the opposite end of that scale, aren't you? Because like you are. It's fair to say you're completely immersed in it, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I think 33 years of being immersed in it. But hopefully I wear my learning lightly and don't come across as a complete arsehole about hip-hop.
Right. Well, look, I've got to thank you because you're a contributor to one magazine and the editor of another magazine that have sort of that hip-hop fans in the UK will know intimately and affectionately. Obviously, the first thing I wanted to sort of ask you about is Hip-Hop Connection. What was your involvement with that magazine? Were you like a main dude? You're a main dude. I mean, I seem to remember seeing your name all over everything, but what was your sort of exact involvement?
Yeah, well, I think I started out, I think it was like the first thing I ever freelanced for, The Enemy. I did a bit for them first. But you know, their hip hop coverage was absolute dog shit. So yeah. I thought I'll try and write Hip Hop Connection because I'd read it since I was a little boy, and you know, I even had an advert in there, you know, on the Connections page back when it first started. Yeah. You know, trying to meet people and swap tapes. I'm gonna do a name drop here. About 12 years ago, I went out for a drink with Louis Theroux, and he told me he also was in Hip Hop Connections page. When he was a kid, as King E.
Is he serious?
Yeah, he's serious. He was a Hip Hop Connection reader as well. Yeah,
I had no idea. I didn't know that about him, man.
So you should get him on because he's got some good hip hop knowledge.
But, that's good to know.
But yeah, I just wanted to write about hip hop for a living because I was so obsessed with it, and yeah, I kind of dropped them a line, and the editor, Andy Cowan, who's a fantastic editor, just was like, yeah, send some stuff in. And within a year, I was writing half the magazine. And I was like contributing editor for a few years and stuff like that. And yeah, just did everything and everybody. I just loved it.
Did writing for HHC bring you more into hip hop, or did it not change your thing at all? Was it just that you're able to write for HHC because of your love of hip hop? I mean, did it make you get more involved in the scene, or were you pretty much stuck in anyway?
I was stuck in anyway, because before I was a writer in my teens, I was a rapper. Or
yes,
well, not really, but I was trying to be a rapper. So I was like, you know, I was the kid in school writing lyrics in chemistry, and it was all like, come on guys, we've got to be positive, not negative, all that kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, that shit is not lost to posterity. It's all terrible. But so yeah, the HHC thing was just about me. I had all this knowledge swimming around in my head. I'm a passion for it, and also I wanted to be a writer. And hip hop journalism back then, you had The Source, which came after Hip Hop Connection, and they had all the access but no good writers. And Hip Hop Connection had goodish writers, but I was like, do you know what? I can be the writer here. I really, you know, I had that ego. So if I couldn't be, you know, like rappers have an ego, like, I'm going to be the best MC. Well, I couldn't be. So I was like, well, I'm going to be the best rap journalist. And but it was such an interesting time to write about hip hop as well, because it was all changing, and like, you know, the independent era was coming in, and all that Wu-Tang were coming through. And but also, like, you know, the internet had been invented. So, you know, I think I remember pitching a column called Webheads, which was like a monthly guide to what's on the internet, you know.
The thing about HHC though is I thought was like, you'd get some like earnest articles and like really getting into it and nerdy, and it satisfied that kind of nerdy thing. But the difference between a Hip Hop Connection and like The Source, for me, and like, you know, correct me if I'm getting it wrong, but like as a reader was like, The Source, I mean, The Source was shit. I mean, because I read Hip Hop Connection before I started reading The Source.
Yeah.
And then started reading The Source because I thought, exactly like you said, they got to chat to the biggest guys, right? I mean, like, that was, that they were able to interview whoever they wanted, it felt like.
Yeah, but it just next was, to them.
Yeah, but it was just like, I just remember not really enjoying it. But Hip Hop Connection was earnest, but also had that sort of thing where it was one degree removed because it's British. And you're sort of able to poke fun at hip-hop in an affectionate way as well, in a way that The Source wouldn't do, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was almost like 2 degrees removed, because when I started, I was still living in Leeds. So I'd get like a train down to London, or if it was a bit of a tough month, I'd get the National Express coach to London. And
oh,
then,
my God.
And then, you know, go down to interview Sada X or Aki Nyeli or Ronnie Size, and then get the coach back, write it up. But I felt, because I lived not in London and not in New York, I could be a bit cheekier about the artists. It's like, you're not going to come to my house and beat me up.
Yeah.
So if you're a bit of an arsehole, I will say as much in the article. Yeah. And I thought that, you know, rather than, because The Source was like, yeah, you're right, it had all the access, but it never questioned the artists. It was always like, it just, you know, every little thing they said, it presented it as a pearl of wisdom. And it was like, look, I love hip hop, but, you know, a lot of rappers talk a lot of shit. And sometimes you've got to call them on it, you know.
And what? Who was the biggest arsehole? I mean, what, like you mentioned Sadat X. I can't imagine Sadat X was like a cheery, like, bloke. Was he nice?
No, I mean, we didn't end up like going off for drinks afterwards and, you know, take him to a Sam Smith's pub and buy him a pint of Ingerbrau. He was hard work, but some are surprisingly easy work. Like I went out for dinner once with Dilla, and we were coming up with porn star names for rap artists over dinner. And it was Slum Village, but it was obviously mostly Jay Dilla you care about, isn't it?
Yeah,
and, not the other two, whoever they were. And you know, I was coming up with like, oh, you know, Jizz Markey and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just came out and went, of course, you could be a Gay D, the gay porn star. And the minute I said it, I thought, I've really messed up here.
That, you've got too familiar there.
He took it in good part. He was really good. But the biggest arsehole ever, well, can I use the C word?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I called Jay-Z a cunt to his face.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because he was making everybody wait. And in the end, I didn't even do the interview. I said, all right, mate, you're a cunt. And I walked out. And then I wrote the article about what he was like. And the same with Red and Meth. I turned up to interview them once, and I was interviewing them at like 11 in the morning, and it was already like two. I think I was there at 2 in the afternoon, and they still hadn't started the interviews before me, and they were just standing behind this rope smoking weed. And all these journalists.
Just so they were there. Just
they were
making
there.
People wait.
Yeah, they weren't like late or flying in. Yeah. They were in the room, but behind a kind of like bouncer's rope, and like making us all wait. And I was just like, right, okay. I called over the press office and went, right, can you tell them both from me they were a right pair of arseholes? And but I did Method Man as well before. I did him in Paris, and he was on the phone to his baby mama, as he said. For half of the interview, like, and eating like a club sandwich, you know. I was just like, mate, come on, be a bit polite. I'm just gonna call you a twat when I write the article. Not that you care, but you know,
that is mad, isn't it? It's mad because you sort of, I don't know where that is. That, do you think that's because generally they just think they're big time and that's it, or do you think they're putting it on because they think it's part of the mystique of like being a hip hop artist that doesn't give a shit about journalists or something?
I mean, because some of them are unfailingly polite. Like the RZA is like, I've done him three times. He's like the best. He's like the best interviewee. You wind him up, and you watch him go. And like, I once sat in a hotel room, just me and him, and he just paced back and forth for 90 minutes talking into my dictaphone, which he'd taken off me. And he was like, "Oh, this is magic," you know. But other ones, they want to treat you with a bit of disdain, like. Prodigy, rest in peace. He fell asleep in a interview with me.
Jesus.
He literally just dozed off, and I was like talking
Where
to him.
Where were you?
In a hotel. And he's just like, all right, mate, you get some kip. I'll just fill your bits in later.
Did you ever have any comeback on anyone like reading an interview of yours and then coming back and saying that you'd represented them badly or anything?
Yeah, a couple of times. I think one of the things I'm proudest of in my writing was like, I think I kind of helped break the kind of raucous records era in the UK.
Yes.
We covered that extensively in HHC, and I think we were there first. And it was quite weird. We used to go to like Raucous on Broadway in New York to interview them. We'd fly out like two times a year, me and Dan, my best mate.
Yeah.
And we just basically like share a hotel room, often with another couple of journos as well. And we just like morning till night interview people to pay for the trip. We turned up at Raucous, and like I think I was interviewing Talib Kweli and Mos Def, and they both went, "Oh right, yeah, Andrew Emery, yeah, you wrote this thing and you said that," and I was like, "Oh
shit,
this is why I should get the coach back to Leeds instead of flying out of New York to meet these people." And I'd go and hide in my mum's bedroom. But I mean, the only time it got a little bit serious was like, in the Fat Lace days when you know that guy Supernatural. Well, we were selling Fat Lace 2, I think, at some music festival, and he saw the autopsy we did of Biggie Smalls, and he just came looking for us, and he was like, "The fuck wrote this? This is disrespectful. This is my man." And we were just like, "You didn't know Biggie, mate. You didn't know Biggie. You've literally had one record out in your life. You didn't know Biggie." It's like, this shit won't go down in New York. I was like, "Well, we're in Folkestone right now." It was one of those fresh events. It wasn't Fresh 97. It might be the one now. Fresh 98 or Fresh 99 or something. It was like on his own, and it was like about 10 of us. It was like, "Come on, mate. Let's not fall out about it. It's just a joke."
I always felt a bit sorry for Supernatural because, like, you'd see those videos of him just freestyling for ages and ages, right?
Yeah.
And just nobody seemed to give a shit. Like, do you know what I mean? It was like he was good. He was good at it. But, like, you felt like he didn't quite get, like, what he was hoping for from it. Do you know what I mean?
No, it didn't really go anywhere, did it? And he had that whole kind of, that shtick of, like, pass me what's in your pocket.
Shows.
You'd be like, "Oh, a pen, a man called Len, Zen, Big Ben." And you're like, "Mate, listen. This is not going to lead to a successful recording career."
I know, it's not just about color words that rhyme. There's got to be some context to it.
But they have those kind of placeholder raps that they do, freestylers. Where like, you know, it's all like to the funk, to the rhythm. And you know, every time they drop that in, it's like their brain's ticking, thinking, right, what the hell do I rhyme with pen? It's also, I tell you what I also hate freestyle rappers is that first minute or the first 15 seconds before they get started, when it's just like, Here we go. And then it come on and it's really underwhelming. It's like, oh, mate. Just do something you've written, mate. Do what Black Thought did, you know.
It's like, it's funny you talk about that, because the Black Thought thing, we've talked about it on the podcast about how amazing it was.
Yeah.
But like one of my friends was talking to me the other day and he goes, I've heard a thing about that some of that might have been pre-written.
Oh, no shit, Sherlock. I've heard a thing. Like, he's tapped into, like, the secret facts. Yeah, he's got, like, listen, mate, this is some deep state info I've got for you here. That was not off the top.
Just like, oh, my God, what are people going to... Are you going to tweet it? How are you going to...
Get the word out, mate.
Are you going to distribute the information? Oh,
tell Assange. Get it to Assange. Spread the word. Catch the Herald. I'm fresh chop and bevel rap on a doctorate level. So F. Scott Fitzgerald, maybe I'm the new Rakim, maybe I'm Fat Pharaoh. Undergarments of armor be my intimate apparel. Pre-Kardashian Kanye, my rhyme play immaculate. Same cadence as D.O.C. Pre-accident, maybe my acumen's on par. Look who's you rapping them, give me the proper respect. Motherfucker, we back again.
Because like, the thing is, it's a bit of a weird one. Because like, obviously Black Thought did that thing, it went viral and it's great. And we were talking about this on the last podcast, but we were just sort of saying that, like, people go, I remember, like, looking at the video and then you look at the YouTube clip and underneath there's people going, this is for, like, all those people that listen to Future and think that's hip-hop and all these people listen to these kids now are going to be ashamed of themselves. And obviously those people aren't going to give a shit. It's like, it's not, nobody gives a fuck. Nobody's going to care that Black Thought, we care because we're Black Thought fans, but people that listen to Future or Trap or whatever, they're not going to give a shit about what Black Thought's doing. But it did make me think that, like, when Lil Yachty comes on and does, like, he obviously can't freestyle or whatever.
Yeah.
The truth is, nobody's actually freestyling. So does it really, I don't even know if it really matters. Do you know what I mean? Like, does it matter if somebody can spit a freestyle off the top of their head? Because most of them aren't anyway, are they?
No. I mean, you know, just case in point, someone who can do it, Supernatural. He wants to listen to that shit. But, I would rather somebody do it, but yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, and also, yeah, all the YouTube comments were like, yeah, Lil Yachty, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, yeah, fine, but you know, Lil Yachty made Broccoli last year, which was a great tune. I love that record. Hey, little mama, would you like to be my sunshine? Nigga, touch my game, we gon' turn this shit to Columbine. Ice on my neck, cost me 10 times 3. $30,000 for a nigga to get free. And it's like, I don't expect him to come on and spit a hot 16. You know, I don't want that from every artist. And they go, I want some people just to make records that I can hear in a club or at a party or on my iPod or whatever, you know. But
yeah,
a Black Thought can do it all, though. He can freestyle, he can kick their drittens, and he can make great records as well, you know.
So yes,
that's what makes him a great to me. You know, he's that level above. But yeah, everyone just wants to, like, use that as a stick to beat the new school with. And it's like, it's just old 45-year-old men like me who've, like, you know, drank too much lager over the years and have got, you know, miserable marriages. Just thinking, just you know, oh, yeah, stick that. This is real hip-hop, that boom bap.
Grow up. Yeah, it's bad. I remember, though, getting, sort of having a moment of clarity, because you talk about club records and stuff like that. But I remember going to, like, a pretty backpacky kind of, but you got to be careful how you say that, hip hop new party or whatever. And my friend, like, there were no club records. It was just like really dense lyrical hip hop. And I remember we just spent the whole night just rapping along to the, I don't even think we danced, man. It was like about part way through, I just turned to us and go, we're just like in a fake cypher here for the whole fucking evening.
Occasionally shuffling our legs a little bit and doing a little like walking in place 1993 dance. And I'm also the worst hypocrite, because, you know, I love club bangers, and I love that era of club bangers, that whole kind of Missy Elliott kind of ludicrous nerd stuff. But I mean, I remember years ago we used to have a Fat Lace night at the Elbow Room, and I'd come on and play the most. I'll be playing like Sir Menelik featuring Company Flow and trying to get people dancing to that. I remember like playing De La Soul Ooh, filling the dance floor, and then putting on a raucous B-side. And I'm not kidding, like, everyone just fucking, it was like it was you know, a fire alarm had gone off. The place was on fire. It was like, you know, all right, okay. So that's how I'm going to play that. Arabellum, Arachel, Swell, Dogs, Piss, Arabellum, Bloody Stain, Towers, 4-4
Power, removed his bowels. Did Hip Hop Connection, did it actually, was it making money? I mean, you flew to New York, so it must have been making a bit
of
money.
Well, no, I flew to New York off my own band.
Oh, okay.
Totally, right, that was it. So like, I'd spend 4 days interviewing 16 people to try and, I mean, I'd come home with like the worst colds and stuff because we were out at all hours. And you go, so we go to Stretch and Bobito's radio show to interview somebody. Then we go to another radio show to interview somebody, and then end up some other place. And yeah, I mean, it just exhausted you, and you were doing it for 5p a word, which is like not an industry standard rate of pay. But so we were very much doing it for the love. It was all about that. Like you heard that people for the source were getting $1 per word, and it's like they're not even using the good words. They're just using all like the thes and the ands, and you know, the rest of it is a press release. It's like, so we got paid shit, but so Hip Hop Connection made some money, but towards the end it was losing money, and it was kept up. I mean, like I say, Andy Cowan, the editor, was like, he's one of my heroes in life. You know, he literally in 12 years never turned down a single idea I pitched to him, which even makes him sound terrible. Just really supportive editor, which is what I think.
Yeah.
But you don't get rich doing hip hop journalism.
No, I wrote into Hip Hop Connection a couple of times actually. I remember writing a letter about how I thought Dr. Dre's The Chronic was overrated, and how this is how embarrassing this is. I remember that I wrote about how The Chronic was overrated and how I preferred Tim Dog. I mean, and I tell you, that has really stood the test of time.
Yeah,
that little fucking declaration.
Did you write under a pen name?
I think it was like Ranger or something like that, or it might have been Lazy Eye, or it was something dreadful. I remember, but
did it spark a hot debate on the letters page?
No, it didn't. Actually, the Dr. Dre thing did, obviously, because everybody else in the country knew that that album was great, apart from me, apparently. So that did. And there was some guy that used to write raps into that letters page. Fuck.
Oh, yeah, there was. Yeah.
It was really funny, actually. I remember.
That's another side effect of writing People Connection. I used to get people writing to me through the magazine and sending me their lyrics and stuff like that. It's like, mate, I don't want a record label. And, you know, I'd get cassettes through the post, and I'd be like,
oh, you must have heard some shit.
I mean, I was a shit rapper, but some of the stuff I heard was like, oh my God. You know, like you could discern one word in 30, and like it was all scrawled, and it was all the letters were doing in that hand styles thing.
Oh,
it's like,
God,
I can't even read this. Just do it. Just, you know, learn how to write properly. Or all caps. 4-page letter about, this is my mission. This is my mission statement as a rapper. I'm going to change the game.
Mate, that hip hop calligraphy is the worst thing. Oh, do you know, like,
I mean, look, I'm on the record. I've got no time for graffiti. I'm bored stiff of it, mate. That's why we did crap graph in Fat Lays, because none of us were interested in graffiti. But hand styles and letters. Like, you're writing me a letter, mate. Just send me an email. You know. Oh, is that an A or a V?
It's so bad, man. It's so bad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I wanted to talk to you about, because you mentioned, we sort of alluded to you being a rapper. You've written a book that came out in August of last year, Wiggers with Attitude, My Life as a Failed White Rapper. You've put this out yourself, is that right?
I have, yeah.
It is a wicked, it is so funny, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's such a funny book. It's so great. So if you haven't read it, I strongly urge you to read it. Is it Nottingham you're from originally, or Leeds? Where is it you're from originally?
A bit of both. I was born in Leeds, but I grew up in Nottingham. So it was the Nottingham rap scene I was originally in, but I did nothing beyond the bedroom there. And it was in Leeds where I actually had a rap group, and, you know, used to go in rap competitions and stuff like that. And, oh God.
And uh, how, I mean, just for the benefit of our listeners, how close did you come to actually making it?
Very, very fucking far away. I think we once almost, we got an offer from G Street to do a 12-inch, a two-sided 12-inch with another artist. This was pre-mobile phone, so we were all crammed into some phone box in Leeds, talking to some guy at G Street going, yeah. And he was like, yeah, we're going to get Stereo MC to produce it. And we were like, nah, mate. We're not working with them. We've got our own producer, haven't we? Just, like, you know, the only people who replied positively, and we're like, no, mate, on our terms or nothing else. And it's like, yeah, okay, mate, nothing else then. See ya. We're like, oh, God, you know.
But you've actually got, like, in the book, you've got, like, you sent stuff to record companies.
Yeah.
And you actually got, I mean, they actually replied to you, didn't they? Like, I've got one, like, East West Records actually sent you a letter. I mean, it's like, these people get back to you. I was actually surprised by that. I thought it wasn't like you. And also, by the way, it's very difficult to find any of your stuff. Can you find your stuff online?
I've started to upload the odd track to my blog, which is the same as the book, wiggerswithattitude.com. And I've put a few of our demos on there. Not the cringiest stuff, but...
Because the only one I found is Drinking Tea with the Lads.
Our big posse track about Drinking Tea with the Lads.
Progressive agenda, be told, we break the mold. Pass me a cuppa before it gets cold, and a chocolate digestive so I can dip it. Countdown wrecks it, and the planetary loonies rip it. Sage gets respect because he's credible to make a vinyl delicious and rather edible. So booker off if you think the North shit, just peep, and we'll tell you what we do to sheep.
It's a good it's good though. It's like really good. I mean, you sort of, in the book, sort of allude to the fact that you think you were shit.
Yeah.
But I think you're actually good. You're good, right?
No, I don't think so. I think we had some good ideas, and we were different in a way that there was a lot of regional rap acts who were like, right, we're going to rap in our own accent and rap about things near us. Because I think it was that time when all the American rappers were going, yeah, you Brits are all trying to sound American when you rap. And I was like, actually, hardly any of them did. Because you listen to Demon Boys or whatever, or London Posse, they're pure London. But we were like, yeah, well, let's do the Yorkshire equivalent of that. Let's rap about Emmerdale Farm and, you know, Betty's Cafe in Holmfirth, and just trying to be a bit parochial. But yeah, there's some of the stuff is okay. I can look at it and laugh and go, you know, I had fun recording that. But some of it I'll never put online, and that's mostly like the political stuff, you know.
Yeah,
I did tracks about, you know, telling black women to have better self-esteem. I mean, can you fucking imagine the balls of this teenage white boy who's never spoken to a black woman, just being like, you know, it's off like a princess queen and all this. Yeah, so
just being waiting for someone from your community to speak up for them.
that'll really give them a bit. That'll give them a boon. That'll give them a boon. Get forward.
The other thing is, I saw one of the other. You did a diss rap. Your sort of first radio play was to a DJ that you'd sort of did a diss rap to, right?
Yeah.
DJ Shock.
DJ Shock. Yeah.
Did you send him a demo?
I think it was like a rap competition online, and I called in, and he made. You know, I think he just took the piss out of my rap name, which was then Scam.
Yes.
Speaking critically about mankind. As you do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the critical element of like talking about tea, drinking tea is, but you know.
And then he got pissed off with it.
Yeah, he just made some comment about my name, and I was like, Scam, what's that? Do you mean Scamp or Scampy or something like that? I was like, right, I'm gonna ring you up and diss you, mate. This will show you. But yeah, do you know what? He came to my book launch, Shock. Shout out Jason.
Did he?
Yeah, I had not seen him for like 20 years. And he's like a big, he was a big, like up here, a big garage and jungle DJ and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was really good. It was a bit of a reunion, and I was like, listen, mate, you're the first time I ever heard my voice on air. And it was a nice little reminiscence, but I mean, it was a terrible rap. I mean, you know, you're rhyming shit, DJing sloppy, way right a rhyme, having to copy.
Is it DJ Shock, I'm going to take you out?
Yeah.
Was that
I know the time, don't need no clock. I'm going to take you out, Shock.
Do you know what? I'm laughing. It's not crap what you do. It's just I can relate to it so much. You know that thing where you just want to be a rapper so much. You know what I mean, like being British and wanting to be part of that leads you to sort of really overcommit. Do you know what I mean? Like
that's
to be
it.
Sort of, you feel like you've really got to make up for the fact that you're not a black guy from the States, basically.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So it's in many, many profound ways, 14-year-old white boys from Leeds are the most discriminated against people in history. Just couldn't get a break.
You know what?
Couldn't get a break.
I was reading your book thinking, I just want this guy to give his community a voice. Do you know what I mean? That's what I was... Just these people need someone to speak up for them. Do you know what I mean? He could have been the guy.
The silent majority that we are.
So anyway, so you went off and you gave up. It was the PA Posse.
PA Posse, yeah.
So you gave up being in the band and then you started doing journalism. And it's fair to say, and I know you won't accept this as a thing because you're a humble guy, but like you shaped the way that British hip hop has grown in this country. Do you know what I mean? Because the Hip Hop Connection and Fat Lace and your sort of immersion, and you also still write for The Guardian, like whenever they need an insider's look into hip hop or urban music, for want of a better sort of catch-all, you sort of write for them as well. Do you look at that and go, yeah, I have contributed, you know, not in the way that I initially wanted to, but you feel satisfied with what you've done and how you... I know that you do other things outside of it, but to all intents and purposes, you've made a lot of your livelihood from hip hop.
Oh, right? Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I do feel like I've contributed to a degree, you know, and... Yeah. I'm quite proud of some of the stuff. I mean, it's not the same as contributing, like you've made a great album or you've made a classic record, but I've kind of been involved in the debate and I've helped shine light on some artists and I've helped call other artists twats when they were being twats. And but also, you're frequently wrong as a journalist as well. I mean, I remember absolutely doing a 1 out of 5 review on the UGK album, which I now adore, and just because I was like, nah, I'm not having it, mate. It's not East Coast boom bap. I'm not having it. So in some ways you think you're shaping the argument, but you're on the wrong side of it. But yeah, it was just a thrilling time because there was always something going on, you know. I mean, I remember staging a fake bank robbery as a fashion shoot for Fat Lace, and we had Madlib in it with us, you know, and it was mental. We're on Belsize Park at the HSBC, wearing Steady B and Cool C masks with Madlib, and it was like, I don't think we're shaping any kind of debate or culture there, but it was so much fun.
And who are you listening to? I mean, do you still listen to a lot of hip hop?
Pretty much.
Are you still in love with it as much? Jesus Christ!
Try again, mate.
Are you still in love with it? Still in love with it as much as you always have been?
No. No. I thought I'd give a one-word answer after it took you.
What was it? It wasn't worth it.
Yeah. No, I am. And I'm never. Yeah. You have those peaks and troughs where, like, oh, mate, I'm getting tired of this stuff now. But then something comes out, and you know, I don't love everything that comes out, but people.
What do you think is shit and what do you think is good at the moment? I mean, what are you listening to?
You know what I think is shit? And what is shit is like people that are just trying to do old school boom bap and just rap about rapping.
Like, yes, right.
I'm going to rap the best. It's like, come on, mate. We're doing this in 1978. And I just don't like, that trad boom bap is really turns me off. But so, I've embraced some mumble rap, but other times if I can't tell what they're saying, I can't enjoy the song that much. But you know, there's loads of great stuff out there. You know, obviously Kendrick is head and shoulders above everybody for me in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but also like there's a couple of guys called Don Tripp and Starlito. I don't know if you know them.
No, I don't actually.
Oh, you'd like their stuff. They're southern rappers, but they're really lyrical. They've got really good guests on their stuff, and they've done a couple of mixtapes called Step Brothers 1, 2, and 3, and they're absolutely brilliant. Pull up shooting, yeah, I clutch spiders just like Curry, but my cup dirty. I shoot a nigga like Future nigga when Young Metro say you ain't trustworthy. Does that make Trip Clay Thompson in the kitchen like Action Bronson? Racks on me like I'm Black Youngster, I'm an all star with cash money. They do really good punchlines, but it doesn't seem like they're trying to be, I don't know, Jurassic 5, you know, they're not trying to throw back, it's just like that. But there's always something new, and that's what I love about hip hop. It evolves. It doesn't sound like it sounded when I got into it in 1984, and that's what I don't want it to be. There's a lot of old dads out there who sound like my dad when I first played him hip hop, and we're like, what's this shit? Turn that off.
I know, that's what I don't understand. It's like, is that the very thing that brought people into hip-hop when they first started listening to it is a thing they complain about it now, which is that it's changed. Yeah. But that's the whole thing about it. I remember like being so proud of hip-hop that it was the most rapidly evolving like genre of music that I could think of. And then now, because it's different to when we got locked into
it, that's it,
that people are pissed off. Do you know what I mean? But like, it just isn't the way. But I mean, I do get it, don't get me wrong.
Oh, I mean,
some
it.
Of the stuff I just think, what the fuck?
I get it, and I think it's fair enough that if you don't like modern hip-hop, that's fine. You don't have to, you know, you can't force yourself to, but don't just piss and moan about it all the time. You know, go listen to something else, you know.
Yeah.
Some of us are able to, I'm not saying it makes us better, but some of us are able to enjoy new and old. And not everything old was great. There's a lot of revisionism out there that, you know, everything that was coming out in the 80s was great, but there was loads of shit then too. There was loads of filler.
Yeah.
And but it was that really fast evolution of hip hop. That's what you write about. It's so exciting to go from electro to like the sampling, the James Brown era, and then you got the jazz era, and then you've got the Wu-Tang grimy stuff, and then you know, and then more electronic stuff came in. It's just fantastic. It always changes, and it's changing now.
Do you listen to, like, for example, would you listen to the new Wu-Tang album, or do you sort of think those you've not got an interest in listening to those people's music anymore? Because I sort of get excited when artists from years ago bring new stuff out, but it tends to be a bit of a disappointment. It's very rare that one of those guys brings out something you're excited about, right?
Yeah, hardly ever. I mean, the last couple of Wu-Tang things, they're the kind of things I put on in the background, think, you know, I'm going to give this a go for old time's sake, whilst I do a tedious freelance article about the apprenticeship levy or whatever I was doing this morning. And you know, it's like, it's just like musical wallpaper. You don't expect it to be good, and it rarely is, but I will always give it a go. Even like, I think Greg Nice had an album out recently with Positive K. I was like, I'll give that a go, because I love those guys. Of course it's like absolutely shit, but you know, I've done my duty by giving it one listen on Spotify.
I know you feel that you should do, shouldn't you? And then like you sort of, and I feel like I'm obliged to sell someone, like one of my mates, oh, it's good, it's better than you think it will be, and then I never listen to it again. I mean, that's typically tends to be my pattern. We constantly on this podcast moan about live hip hop, and you must have seen a shit ton.
Oh god, yeah.
Are there any particularly good or particularly bad gigs that stick out in your memory?
Well, seeing Public Enemy live in the 80s was always amazing. It was never less than brilliant. I remember getting to the front once and touching Flavor Flav's hand and thinking it was amazing. And also NWA, when they played Birmingham, and they couldn't sell any tickets for it. There was a minibus from Leeds, and there was like five of us on it. And that's all you could raise for NWA, Easy E and Above the Law.
Holy shit.
Supported by London Posse, Hijack, somebody else. And there's five people from Leeds went. And I caught Easy E's towel that he threw into the crowd.
Nice.
Subsequently disposed of it once, you know, he got his diagnosis. But I don't think you can catch AIDS from towels, but I was not taking any chance.
No. And also, it seems like a ridiculous way to get it, doesn't it?
It would be unlikely.
But even if there's a 0.01% chance of that happening, you don't want that to be the reason that you got it. Do you know what I mean? Like, what happened? But I kept hold of one of Easy's old towels for too long. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not the...
But as a piece of hip-hop memorabilia, it's worthless as well, because you could say to people, hey, look, this is Easy's towel. And they're like, what about? It's just a Holiday Inn towel, mate. You just want to stay in the Holiday Inn. Probably had a wank into it, you know. But yeah, but I think the one I'm most angry about as a gig is, and this is a ridiculous story, but I went to the Big L tribute concert in New York at Tramps.
Right.
And I was with the guy.
Well, how long ago was this?
Was this the late 90s, I think? I can't remember.
Right, okay.
My use of dates, but Big L had died. They were putting on a big show, and he was hosted by Gangstar, and there was like all like Freddie Fox playing and people like that, and all the kind of New York cream were out. And I went down there with the guys from Fat Beats Records, because I've been hanging out with them that day. I'm like, this is gonna be an amazing night. And I think he was just getting started, and I got into a fight with a rival New York hip hop magazine over the choice of a font that we used. And I'm not kidding.
No, what happened? So did you use the same font as them?
So do you know Ego Trip magazine?
Yes,
I mean, that's a great magazine, and I had the privilege to write a couple of pieces for them, and then you know, so I knew them a little bit. So we did a spread, I think, in our magazine that was a kind of homage to them. We used their fonts, their typical style, but as a kind of, you know, this is, we admire you guys, you're our favourite magazine. And then they saw it, and the fact that we were trying to sell it in New York, and they were like, "You come into our city, biting our fonts," and they were like,
"Oh my god!"
I'm not kidding. And there was five of them, like Chairman Mao, Brent Rowland, yeah. Gabe Alvarez, all those guys were pushing me around in this club. I was on my own because Dan, my best mate and my partner in rhyme, had diarrhea back in the hotel, so he missed it for another reason entirely. So, but yeah, I'm getting pushed around with a font, and like our designer was called Barry B. And funnily enough, I was listening to the MK podcast you did recently.
Oh yeah,
Barry used to do all MK's mixtape sleeves for him and stuff like that.
Artwork.
Artwork for him. But it was, and they were like, "Oh, your man Barry B. The B is for biter." I'm like, "We're grown men here. Come on, what is this?" So they're basically like, "We'll leave, or we're going to fuck you up." Like to leave, like tell me my legs.
Yeah,
just hear Gangstar coming on stage, you know, and
my god,
and like, and I'm like going out into the night and trying to hail a cab to go and see my mate who's like, you know, shitting his ring out in the toilet to say, "Well, what a great night this is in New York."
You mentioned the MK's cover art there, but you did a book about cover art, right?
I did.
The book of hip hop cover art.
Yeah.
So is this because you think that hip hop cover art's the best, or is it just something you're interested in, or how did it come about?
I just had a collection because I was always a big vinyl hoarder, and so many covers that I just end up framing and putting on my wall. And I just thought it's a kind of untold story in a way, that the way the art reflects the music. So you go from all those early kind of space agey covers, you know, from the electro era to kind of the more street stuff, and then you've got all the kind of labels that thought about their artwork, like Stone's Throw and Raucous and that. I just thought it'd make a nice story. I never expected anyone would publish it. And it was really fun to write because it's mostly pictures, so there's not that many words in it, which...
Yeah, that's great.
As an author, that's what you should try and do. You just have loads of pictures in your book.
Did you have Walking with a Panther in it, by any chance? LL Cool J?
No, that didn't make it.
Wow, that's a shame. Because to me, that is... the quintessential hip-hop album cover. A man with an artificial panther.
Is there a bin in it as well? Is he walking past the bin?
I think there might be.
Like, you can see the art director going, "Mate, we need a bin in it."
Do you know the thing about the album cover that gets me is I think, okay, it's an album cover. When you look at it, just an instant, you see the photo. But somebody had to fucking turn up with that thing.
Yeah.
Like, you had to spend a few hours doing it. At no point... did anyone go, "This is a bit stupid, isn't it?"
Yeah, just call it Just call it Walking Without a Panther. And then you don't have to hire a panther for the day.
Or it wouldn't surprise me if they did the photo shoot and then said, "We're going to have to fucking call it Walking with a Panther now." Otherwise, that photo shoot is a complete waste of time. Do you know what I mean?
About what?
Dave had to put that fucking thing in a lorry, mate. Bring it over it.
What I'm surprised with the way people in hip-hop get things wrong is that, like, they didn't get a panther and then call the album Walking with a Leopard. Because that is the kind of shit you expect from rap.
That is exactly.
A few years ago, I was on eBay and I bought myself an original Walking with a Panther jacket, like a tour jacket.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh, this is going to be the best jacket, mate. I'm going to wear that into some trendy little London clubs. That's going to look great." And it turned up.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I'm like 6'2" and 17 stone, so it went down to about my elbows. But it also had in massive letters, which they hadn't shown me on eBay, "Karen" stitched on the front. So.
Oh my god.
Didn't get warm once. Yeah, I've changed my name to Karen, mate. Karen.
Listen, I wanted to ask you about hip hop voices.
Oh, yeah.
Talib Kweli, his voice is shit, isn't it? No, it's not shit, but I mean, do you think if he had a better voice, he would have been bigger? Because he's a good rapper, right?
Yeah, I mean, he did a couple of good albums, didn't he? I mean, that one with all the Kanye West beats on was good, and, you know...
He reminds me, he reminds me of, like, the hip-hop version of Broccoli.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, you should listen to him, and he's good and all that, but you just don't... I don't know. I feel sorry for him in a way.
It's
a
bit wholesome, some of it.
And
it's a bit bookshoppy. It's like, this is what I read in my Black Radical bookshop this morning. I'm now going to make a record about it. But he was in Leeds last year, and it was like a little hip hop symposium attended by about 42 people, and he was in there, and I was like, "How the mighty have fallen, mate! You're in Leeds on a wet Saturday, talking about hip hop and the keeping the culture real. I was like, I can't even listen to this now, mate. I've got to go. I'd rather nip out and get some shopping.
Have you listened to the new Eminem album?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What did you make of it?
I absolutely hated it.
It's breathtaking, isn't it? How bad it is.
I was shocked. I mean, there's like about one good, I don't know, maybe there's about 30 good seconds on it. And you're like, you get that glimpse of Eminem. And it's tricky because I know Eminem's manager a little bit, and he's a very nice guy. And I was offered to review it for a newspaper, and I went, no, because I would end up souring my relationship because his album is so bad. I don't want to have to.
Yeah, it's. Do you know what's weird about it? It's like, I think most people, apart from sort of the biggest kind of fanatics, will accept that his best work is probably behind him. He's probably put out his best record. So you sort of go, well, I don't expect this to be better than anything he's done ever before. But the fact that I just can't believe that there was no level of quality control on that record to just go, this just isn't good enough, man, or should we spend some more time doing this? Because he would have been better off just putting an uninspired load of like guest producers and just spitting some just generic kind of battle shit on it, like, then putting that out, man, because that was just like,
and the guests were terrible.
It's so oh my god,
you know, it's like, what are you thinking of doing a song with Pink? You know, was Emily Sandé not available? If you're trying to bland us out, it was just awful. And then I think the thing is as well, you know, people were like, you know, but it's a really political album. It's, you know, he's engaged with Trump, but you know what? You know, if you're a grown up and you read a good newspaper, you don't think that's particularly incredible political analysis he's doing there. He's basically sitting in a car park with his mates, going, "You got orange hair." You know, you play golf. I mean, that's what that freestyle. You know, people are mad about that and sharing it. It's like, that's not the Black Thought freestyle. You know, the Black Thought freestyle
is
the next level. This is like a bloke just like, not even over music. And it reminds me of those kind of those battle rap nights that happen now, where it's increasingly not over music, and it's just people doing really offensive punchlines about each other, and then stopping, pausing, and waiting for the laugh. And it's like, if you actually put a hip hop beat on now, none of you would be able to rap to it. You'd absolutely not.
I know.
Just a load of.
It's so bad. And then the worst thing is when they do one of those lines, it gets nothing, and then goes, "You catch that?" I said, "When I sit on a thermostat, this guy feels too whack to overreact." And just everyone's like, "We did hear it. We actually gave you what it deserves." Is what
well, you're not underrated. You are correctly rated as being a shit MC.
Plug one, plug two, guest plugs for you.
Listen, Andrew, we are out of time, I'm afraid, man. Pretty much. But
thank you so
much. You've been such an amazing guest. Is there anything you want to plug? I mean, obviously we've got your book, and you're selling it through your website, right? And you can get it from Amazon.
Yeah, you can get it from Amazon. Like it's on Amazon, all the Amazons. As an ebook, or you get it directly from me on my blog, wiggerswithattitude.com, and they're signed copies.
Is it better to get it from me directly or from one of those sellers?
Swings and roundabouts. Either way is good. But if you want a personal dedication, buy it from my website. The other thing is, me and Dan are crowdfunding a book at the moment called Promo Only, which is a collection of all our hip hop memorabilia. And that's not going great guns, to be honest. So if you want to back
to us. Is it, what's the website?
Unbound.com/promo-only. There's a little video of us showing some of the things in there. It's like incredibly rare t-shirts, jackets, hip-hop board games, stuff like that.
All right, wicked. Okay, so check that out if you can. Andrew, Happy New Year, mate.
Thank you so much
for coming on. I appreciate it. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.